I didn't put eyeliner on today.
You did not put mascara on, nothing.
I put lip gloss on because I was running on a treadmill, so I felt like a trash bag.
But good for you for running on a treadmill.
Yeah, I get a little obsessive about stuff, which explains a lot in my life, really. So, like, if I can start doing it, I do it, like, kind of psychotic. Like, I was running a 5K every day during the pandemic. It was kind of psychotic.
I worked out 6 days a week during the pandemic, like, for, like, an hour or so. It was a lot. I would like to go back, not maybe to 6 days a week, but, like, some days a week, but I feel like a broken human when I get home from teaching the youth. So,
yeah, that's partially why I don't feel as broken, because I'm not teaching the youth. I'm teaching the adults.
You're teaching adults.
So that have paid to be there. So if they don't want to do good, it's their money. So it really does change things, actually.
I mean, I would imagine.
I miss the youth sometimes, though, because the youth, like, have these, like, moments of where it hits, and they're like, look at the timing of that.
I know. I was like,
that was a text from Josh.
Sound effects.
Josh Patterson. Josh Patterson once again makes it into this week's podcast.
He's obsessed.
Yeah, so he will. I think we're obsessed with him. I don't know that he talks about us as much. He's in a text with me, Christy and Taylor of Taylor Tillich. And Tillich. I was saying last night, I know this just shows that we're really incestuous at Bear Camp. I was like, which you notice he didn't answer. I said, I know that there is a text chain with Tripp, Nick Polk, Will Rose, Josh Patterson, and Joshua Noel. And I don't know, that group at least that we aren't a part of.
And you want to be part of it.
I said I'd be their beard.
Yeah. Josh did not answer, and I did take
he
that.
He sure didn't. He sure did not.
Confirmation that that group text exists, and confirmation that you are not allowed in.
Well, one day I'm going to steal someone's phone if I know the people, and I'll just give them some IPAs or whatever. Yourself? I'll give them some IPAs and steal their phone.
I think that'll be easy.
I really do. I don't think they would be a really hard sell.
No.
Especially since I talked to Tripp and Kristen I emailed about our idea about Rocky Horror. If we're really dressed like that, it'll be a real easy sell.
It will be a very easy sell. I know.
Just be like, IPAs, hobbits, corsets. And there goes the phone. And I don't want any of your information. I just want to be added to the group chat.
Yeah. And she won't. This is what Leah will do, is that she won't actually save anybody's names. So it'll just be like a fun guessing game of like, who's talking to me right now?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. I had Taylor's number, but I didn't have Josh. So when he, I think, created that group, I like had no idea who that human was.
Leah side texted me and she was like, who is talking to us right now?
Like, I knew I had your number and Taylor's number. And I was like, I know that it's a beer camp boy, but that truly does not narrow that down at all.
That's the entirety of
considering,
beer camp.
I was going to say, considering, like, of our age demographic, we're, like, the three ladies, Sarah, and Sari, I would add Sari, to that as well. And they are more than welcome to, y'all are more than welcome to join our group text, and Kristen as well.
Look, anybody wants to be in a group text with me, I'm down, because I like talking to people as much as humanly possible.
Same. Yep. So feel free.
Feel free.
Now, if you are a boy group chat, am I going to make fun of you because of what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
But know that I had brothers, and Christy had brothers, and you really can't say anything.
I do still have those brothers too.
I have a long dating history where I was.
You can't shock me. I lived with five guys in college. So let's talk about how very little can shock me anymore.
I tried to think what was the max boy living situation. So I shocked my mom in Edinburgh by living with a guy, which was very unBaptist of me. Well, and then that proceeded to be two more after that. But then I think in Belfast, I lived with 1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all Belfast boys can correct me. I think I live with 5.
I lived in
Irish guys.
My senior year of college, I lived in a house. There were 3 of us girls and 5 guys. Some of the guys rotated a bit. So like if we just totaled up as many, it's probably more like 7 guys. But the stories I could tell are plentiful. They're plentiful.
You know one really particular one that involves Susie.
I have many stories.
That one will not be repeated on any podcast.
None of my stories will be on these podcasts here either, but I will probably tell them to you in person because some of them are really funny.
Yeah. You did actually tell one where you abandoned one of your girl roommates like an asshole. And when someone was coming, your stalker was coming. Oh, that one really, look, that one sat with me for a while.
Because then you knew that I will also abandon you.
Yeah, that you'll also leave me. I did say I'd push you down in a zombie apocalypse. So, but you gave me permission to do that.
I don't want to survive the zombie apocalypse. I know, we've
established this. Yeah. That's why I'm on my treadmill so I can
survive. Let me die. It's fine. Shoot me in the head, though, because I don't really want to become a zombie. I don't think I would know, you know, yeah. Okay.
That would be a fun geek stage thing to do zombie films as well. Anyway, now that Christy and I have
Theology on the Rocks,
where we didn't live out our best evangelical lives or Baptist lives.
We were not.
Evangelical.
And cheers. We have a new pope. We don't because we're not Catholic, but there is a new pope.
Yeah, but everyone, I'm blaming this exclusively on Conclave and also the billions of Catholics in the world.
Cheers. I didn't know how to make this drink, so I just followed my heart.
I mean, I don't think you can do it wrong.
Okay.
That's real good.
Yeah, it's tasty. Leah, tell our listeners what we're drinking today.
Yeah, so we are drinking a Cuba Libre, which, because it goes with the topic of today's convo, Christy is about to leave me.
I know.
Which is all the more reason to add me to your group chat. Because this is about 90% of my conversation per day. That and animals is you should. She's going to Japan. She's taking some students to Japan. And so we were contemplating this and thought we should talk about our time and study abroad / leading students abroad because
you've led actual trips. This is my first one that I've led.
Well, I've led two.
I mean,
I've led two
more than me.
To the same place, to Northern Ireland. So I created a master's degree in peace building at Glasgow University. And so I led a group of postgrad students from Glasgow to Northern Ireland, as well as Stuart, which was fun. That was in the beginning of our relationship. And he went down the Falls Road where it was like, screw the British. And he was like, I'm not going to say a single word. And then I led a group of Queen's University Charlotte, not to be confused, students to Northern Ireland as well, which was probably the most recent one I did. And that was undergraduate students. And Lord Jesus Christy, that's a whole other situation.
That's, yeah.
At one stage we lost a student and she had crawled underneath a trundle bed and she got, I think, mad at her roomies at the time. Because they could drink over there, which is a key bit of this perspective. So, I at one stage, they were like, Leah, you need to go in there. And I was like, first of all, these weren't my students. I was at Pfeiffer. I was like, they're not mine. Like, if you lose one, that's on you. I'm just friends with the professors there. But I was like on my hands and knees. I'm like, I am a doctorate under a trundle bed in Belfast. And I was like, hello. And she was like, I'm not coming out. And I was like, cool. Well, I said, but you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're fine.
And she's like, but I'm not coming out. And I was like,
cool. I did.
There's a lot of things.
When I was a student teacher, because for many semesters of my undergraduate experience, I was intending on being a high school English teacher. And I did 3 semesters of student teaching.
And I would have just gone on ahead and done that. That's a lot of slog to get through to not get the degree.
I was really close to being like, you know what? I hate every minute of this, but there was something, and I don't really remember because I passed I passed my portfolio review. Like I was really close to getting that degree and I just didn't, but it's okay because you know what I will never do is go be a high school English teacher. So
sorry, Nick.
I don't want to do that. But one of those semesters I did chaperone the Future Business Leaders of America went to States, which was in Vail, Colorado. And we were in cabins and there were hot tubs. And anyway, as you can imagine, a bunch of high schoolers with access to hot tubs and their own cabin with no chaperone inside of it. There was a lot of drama and a lot of yelling.
If we start doing in-state stuff, then I've got a portfolio because I was a youth pastor.
Yeah, that's the only trip I've ever done, but it was a public school trip. It was not. And it was business leaders. And you know who are the worst high schoolers is the FBLA kids. And I know this because I was one of them when I was in high school.
You went to a Christian school. I feel like your level of bad was real.
No, but
you told me you were a real good student yesterday.
I saw them. I wasn't the one participating in this. But we went to States. I know what happened. I was around it. I was horrified because I was a goody two shoe, but I was
right. Yeah, the high school stuff wasn't as like dramatic like as some of the college, because I wouldn't let them get away with because I did mostly stuff with, I was a youth minister in Baptist church, so you weren't allowed to do anything. And then I was a youth minister at a Disciples church, which you were, again, no clue.
You and your
I know, it's not my fault. I don't know how to turn it off, which means it'll never go off. It's Josh again. He's really excited about the Pope. I don't know, whatever. Yeah, the youth minister days were I ruled them with an iron fist, but once they hit like eight, I was a youth minister for 4 years total. But then you got your cell, one kid like left his cell phone somewhere. I was like, it's dead to you now. Like, that's it. I was driving a van to like Biloxi, Mississippi or something after Hurricane Katrina. That's a true story. Anyway, so, but the overseas are a different kettle of fish because you really don't have any authority. These kids are 18. They can't, well, mine couldn't go on the trips unless they were over 18. So your authority is really, really quite low.
I have an interesting range of ages. So they range from about 18 to like 30 years old. So I don't know what to expect. I don't know what I've gotten myself into, but
you'll have good stories.
I will have good stories. And that is 90% of my motivation for doing anything, including
I told you that
my constant attempts to try to get you to go camping with me.
I was trying to erase all these pictures off of my phone and I clearly screenshotted those and then they just lived on my phone. And I was like, I love that I just started with a just no.
Just no.
Like, no. No matter what.
Come on.
I love you, but no. So I'm just not a, like, well, I don't know. I've seen some of those bubbles that are like with the wolves and like the big beds that are like romantic and sexy with the stars.
I mean, those are
obviously. But I wouldn't necessarily be doing that.
But we wouldn't be in that. But we would have a good time. I mean, it doesn't have to just be the two of us. We can invite other people.
I don't care about the two of us. You and I can have a ball. I don't need other people, but I'm just saying, I don't want to be on the ground.
Well, no, I want us to have an RV, you know, like a little RV that somebody else drives up there. Or we can get a cabin. That's fine too. But I
grew up in, go ahead.
All I really want to do is to be in the mountains with a campfire and like spend the night, you know, doing campfire shit. And
drinking.
Yeah. And
talking
and shit. All of the, it's like a magical time sitting around campfires.
I can tell you where my PTSD came, and it is not PTSD, but it is something close. Because I grew up in Georgia, as you all know, most of my boyfriends drove like 50s and like were really big on like hiking and mountaining and let's do this sort of sleep on the ground thing, which was really, well, anyway. So yeah, that was one of their things. So now anytime anyone brings it up, I'm like, I've done that. Like that part of my life is done. It's like Stuart saying, because we were talking about UGA and the master's degree, and he was like, would you go get a PhD? And I was like, no, I've done that. Done. I'm not going to do that again. And I just feel like my camping days are
behind me. Like one of my students one day was like telling me about this club in Tampa. And she was like, before you go. And I said, stop right there, because I am not going to go to that club. And she was like, well, but, and I was like, no.
Dance club?
Yeah, like nightclub. Like,
don't almost say that.
You know, I'm not going to that. I used to go to clubs. I had my lace up clubbing pants. And
I want to know how that worked.
You know,
where were they laced?
Up the sides. And I wore those to death. And I, you know, I had my clubbing. I'm done now. I don't want to go clubbing. It's sticky. Everyone is kind of gross. Like
the last time that I
want to go sit by a campfire. It's fine. I'll take somebody else.
You can, don't be like that. You know what you're doing, you youngest child bullshit. You'll take somebody else. I'll take one of my good friends. Oh, go on. You know I'll go if you make it appealing enough. But also, like, I could handle the heat better than you, I bet. If we got the cold is what gets me, because the last time I went camping, and you already know the story, but our listeners don't, it was in Scotland. And you know how they run deals on those like Groupon sites?
Yeah.
I was with my previous boyfriend who was Irish, or is Irish. He's still alive. And he still is Irish. And we got this, we were living together, sorry, grandma, and we got this Groupon to go camping in kind of like the Highlands area. And it was only for November and December. And this should have been a red flag for me. Automatic red flag. But we thought, you know what? We'll do this. So we go, and it's a campsite that's on the grounds of like this very majestic sort of like building. And we don't have a car at the time. So it's public transport only. So we get there, we get all our stuff. And we found that it's one of those wooden like triangle huts situation. I don't know what they're called. You outdoorsy people can tell me. Who's that guy that does the like camping with Kierkegaard?
Oh yeah, that guy. We'll ask him.
He can tell us all about it anyway. So Kierkegaard, no, I ain't going camping. I don't care if Kierkegaard's there or not. That almost makes me want to go camping.
I'm absolutely less going camping if Kierkegaard's
there. I'm less interested in going camping.
Not happening.
No, if we had a theology beer camping tour, I might, because we'd have drinks. Anyway, so it's November. I'm in this thing. There's nothing insulating me here. Yeah. And there's two single beds, so I can't even snuggle up to this man. It has rained because Scotland, so the firewood is wet. So we have a giant bottle of scotch, and there is a hot tub. And I look over at one stage, and another couple have got a Groupon thing too, but they have got a car, so they are sleeping in their car with the heat on. So I get in the hot tub. I take the guy, by the way, I want to preface this by saying this is not something you should do.
No,
it is it is a 20-year-old. Yeah. It's a late 20-year. Would I do it today? Possibly, but it still doesn't mean that you should do it. So I climb in the hot tub with the bottle of whiskey. I take it with me, and I spend the entire night in that hot tub.
No,
and I take the cover and I like cover it up to like here to hold my head up.
Dear God.
I didn't fall asleep though, because I was too cold. You were too cold. It didn't matter. You know, you just think about that.
Here's
when you
the
ask
thing
me
about camping in Colorado is that it doesn't matter what time of year it is. It's going to be cold at night.
Firm no.
You go up to the mountains and like the day will be fine, but the night, like the picture I posted on our Instagram, I'm wearing two coats. I don't know if you can tell that, but I have two coats on.
Did you put a camping pick up?
I did. I put camping picks up.
Amazing.
But that was in the summer. Like that was fully June or something. Maybe May, but like it was in the summer. So yeah, it's gonna be chilly. So that's
why
do
we have to go to Colorado? Spent so much time. Why can't we go to Georgia?
No, but I'm just saying, my camping experiences are always cold. Like okay, I've never had a hot camping experience. I don't know what I would
do. Oh, it's another thing.
Because
it's another
the thing that I don't like about camping, like I love the whole night part and then you have to go to sleep, but then you're cold and I can't sleep if I'm cold. Like I cannot do it. And so then I don't sleep and then I'm grumpy. And then the next morning I hate everybody because I didn't sleep and I'm grumpy. So I'm like, if it was hot, that would be a whole new ball game. Cause then I could at least.
No, you wake up. I'll tell you what the hot experience is like. The nighttime's fine, except it's hot. So you're sweating. And then you wake up at like 4 a.m. because come to find out a tent is really just an incubator.
Yeah.
So you wake up and you are sweating and it's not even like light outside because you're so freaking hot.
You're like, this is miserable.
You don't sleep on the other end. You might sleep from like 1 a.m. to 4, but then at 4 you're up and you're drenched in sweat. And there is, you go out and you look at everyone and they all look horrific. And hopefully you have a body of water that you can just strip off everything of bit of clothing you have and just go in the water. I swear the last time, this is revealing a lot about me in this podcast, but the last time I went camping, I woke up like that and I was with a whole group of people with like boyfriends and I just stripped off every bit of clothing I had. And I was like, tell them to turn away. I couldn't like wear the clothing anymore. That's I was funny. Like, if they look, it's on them. I can't be like this. And it was funny because a lot of the girls were like, oh, we're going to do that too.
Yeah.
And then we just made the guys like face away.
Yeah. I'm always cold. Like I went camping with my brothers a few years ago. This was the worst part about camping with my brothers is that they both have RVs and they didn't have room for me. So my brothers are in their nice RVs with their wives. I am sleeping in a tent with my nephew and my brothers.
The only child thing only goes so far, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Cause they were like, you're young. And I was like, I hate this. So I'm in the tent with my nephew. I complained about it enough that my brother brought me a hammock So I was sleeping in a hammock.
I've been in one of those.
It wasn't on the ground, but it was still very cold. And those two assholes were in their like tricked out RVs, all comfy, whatever. But okay, this is going to be my one camping story that I will tell on the podcast.
We have to move on to the actual abroad stuff.
I've already told several camping stories. This is quick.
This is her only child. This is what she pulls. This is why she gets 75 choices as well. And things.
Youngest child, not only.
Whatever. You might as well have been an only child. You told me this multiple times.
We were all camping in one tent in college, and one of our friends didn't want to sleep in the tent, so he was like, I'm going to sleep outside. None of us got any sleep because camping is miserable. And the next morning...
I feel like this was the easiest conversion of you that anyone has ever
had. This is why I've said repeatedly now, we're not going to go camping in a tent. We're going to go in an RV.
But we don't have an RV either. Okay,
find one.
Christy, where?
There are... You can rent them.
You're already off the dating sites. We can't find that or a boat now. You were my hope for finding a boat person.
That wasn't going to happen. Only conservatives have boats, and I can't.
I had this conversation with someone at a bar the other night in Charlotte, and they agreed.
That's true. Liberals don't have boats. It's very sad.
Do liberals have RVs?
I don't have any idea. I've never surveyed that. I'll figure that out. But we're going to go camping. We're going to go camping. I'm making it a mission. I've given up on my story. So let's move on.
No, go tell me the rest of it.
We've moved on. I can't remember where I left off.
You said you were going camping, and then you started talking about RVs. That's as far as it got.
That is not as far. I just remember.
It was.
We were all
in. It actually was.
Oh, my God. Okay. You led two trips overseas.
I did. I went on three trips.
And you went on three trips.
In my educational career. One was to Cuba when I was in my master's.
Which is why we're drinking the Cuba Libres.
I really just wanted to explain the drink, which I think the drink is having an effect on us right now. I'm just going to say. We're getting very close to Scottish Reception Unhinged at the moment.
This is two deeply unhinged episodes in a row.
I think when we start drinking a lot, we fall very much into our oldest sibling, youngest sibling roles. It just goes really quickly back to that. Yeah, so I went in my master's to Cuba, and we did a experiential learning there, which was fun and interesting. And
I don't actually know what you did there. Like, if I'm being honest, I know you've been there. I know it was for school, but like, I don't know what the
So it's a kind of interesting thing with the Baptists, because they used to have a thing called mission immersion, which is what the title of the class is called.
Okay.
But now what they typically do is they go to predominantly Christian areas, because the Baptists, at least the good ones, are trying to shift that sort of mission as like colonialization / white savior complex situation. Mm-hmm. So what they do now is they typically go, at least Mercer, to places that are already religious, Christian religious, and you would like do like pulpit supply, or you would like teach Sunday school. So like do something to help the churches that are already there.
Yeah.
So you don't actually have to. Yeah. You're not like, because it's Cuba. They'd be like, yeah, we love Jesus. Do you want some rum?
We're already aware. Yeah.
We're already there. It's like going to Georgia and trying to evangelize. So that was what it was. So technically it was the mission immersion, but really I have pictures of me very, very sweaty, speaking of hot, teaching a Sunday school class and preaching at several churches with the little interpreter. Like, not the little, well, she was little actually, but she was an interpreter. Shorter than me. Beside me interpreting what I was doing. So that's what I did. We would go and look at things, and you were supposed to kind of learn about what Christian, it was more like what I would argue was a contextual Christianity class.
Yeah.
In the sense that you're trying to learn what Christianity looked like from their perspective, essentially.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So like we would go to museums and we would go to their churches when we weren't there, and they would translate for us. And so it's just trying to learn like what their flair of Christianity looked like. And so to be in a communist country, you know, it was very interesting to kind of learn about how they went about it. And then I did shut down a computer thing because I Googled CNN. Which you don't do. It's communist. But I loved it. It was great. And so we drank a lot, but they have very simple drinks. So this Cuba Libre is Coke. Bacardi, actually, I looked on the thing. It was the only one I had, but it says that it originated in Santiago, Cuba.
Oh, okay, good. So you got Yeah.
Formerly Cuban and lime. And so you just, people drink these and daiquiris like it is their job. Yeah. And it's a really great chill place. I learned a whole lot, especially about like, you know, I learned a lot about, you and I have both been to China.
Yes.
But like the Christian groups in China, if they do exist, are underground, hidden usually. Like they're not on the forefront. Whereas like the Cuban version of communism had sort of accepted, or Cuban sort of accept, these people were Christian. Like, yeah, that's just the system that we're in. Like, so we're going to have to, I think China was like, you have to adjust to us as the Communist Party. And the Communist Party was like, we kind of have to take you into consideration because the population's so big. So it made itself its own version of kind of,
yeah,
an interesting Christianity under communism.
I think that's so interesting. So also thinking about like different ways that religions and governments, not just communism, but any government, I mean, we can talk about it with the US too, yeah, how religions and governments exist together, because they don't exist in like silos. It's not like the religion and the government are not interacting. I think especially in the US, we think that they're not supposed to interact because we have separation of church and state, but they, and then we miss the ways that they do interact, or we don't take it seriously enough until we get to where we are now with Christian nationalism being so pervasive. And so like one of the things that I most appreciate about traveling, and especially traveling with a kind of religious studies in mind, is looking at the ways that religions and governments interact. Because I think when you get out of your own context and you see it, then you can come back home and recognize it better. And that, I think, yeah, that happened for me with, I did two study abroads as a student. One was in high school. We went to Norway. And that was a fantastic trip. And
then, as you do, I say
as you do in a fancy school like mine. and then to China.
We went to Orlando.
We also went to Orlando.
I'm sure.
For SLA. But yeah, it was, I think, because Norway was the first time I ever like really traveled overseas. Like I had been to Canada and the Bahamas, but like those were, you know, vacations with my parents, and also like not, I think, like in the Bahamas, we're just on a resort, you know, and Canada, God love them, but it's not like a cultural shock up there.
I've never been to Canada. It's confession.
It's very clean. That's the thing. I remember both times I've been to Canada, I'm always just like, man,
you could tell me anything and I'd be like, okay, sure.
They do a really good job of cleaning up here. So we went to Norway. We had a little layover, a day layover in Amsterdam, which was a really interesting experience as a 16-year-old on a high school trip, because I accidentally wandered down the red light district with my Bible teacher.
Accidentally. Not exactly. Once you start, you know you're on it.
Well, we like kind of got into it, giant, and then we were like a giant
this fountain with like rotating balls.
We like walked like a little bit into it, and then we both kind of stopped and we went,
I'm out. Howdy.
We should maybe turn around. But we went to Norway and we spent 2 weeks in Norway and primarily working with another high school over there. And it was so interesting to talk with people who grew up in such a different culture, especially religiously. Norway is mostly secular, like technically Lutheran, but not the way that Americans understand religion.
Technically, they go through the rites and rituals so they can go to the good schools.
Yeah, like it's just so different.
Our Finnish friend has told us about this.
And then two, to see that much history being kind of a big part of it, like there was overlapping conversation about the ways that they understood religion and their cultural past in a way that Americans don't tend to do because our history sucks, you know, and
it's just short. I'm not going to let you say it sucks.
I mean,
part of it sucks, for sure.
And if we're like trying to talk about, I think I've mentioned this before, but I think like we don't do a good job of connecting ourselves to our own actual histories of being like, you know, my ancestry is this, and so I'm going to connect to that. We just kind of are like America, and then we quit there. Or we like just talk about being Irish when it's convenient to be Irish.
We did talk about, I was going to say, actually, you and I both went through our entire, well, not our entire, but our four major genealogy points.
Right.
Well, but we didn't address what the Scots and the Irish who came over, did they have slaves sort of thing. We didn't get to that part, you know, because They're trying to erase that part as we speak.
I think it was like one of those situations where they had all of this history to talk about, but they also knew it and they didn't see it as being like weird. Like, I remember them talking about like some of the
something to be afraid of, the
way that we do. And yeah, and it wasn't like this like thing to kind of ignore, or it just was so different. I just remember being really impressed by the depth of cultural connection that they had, that especially I think living in Colorado, you super don't get at all. So that was,
I think with Cuba, I really respected in a way, because I went to China first and China was great. And you and I can both talk because we both did study abroad there, but it did feel a bit disconnected from religious studies. Like, I went over on a religious studies joint trip with psychology as well, because I was actually a psych major at the time. And I actually got a lot more info about the psychology of the people, I feel like, than the religious aspects. But Cuba, I think, was more interesting because, you know, they really, we had been taught, at least in the American sense, of how evil communism is and, you know, McCarthyism and the Red Scare and all that mm-hmm. in the 50s. And, but I think with them, and of course, you can see that in real life, but, you know, I would say any system of government is capable of those atrocities, as we're hopefully not going to happen now, but we can see leaning that way. The Cuban government really prided itself on being Christian in the sense of communalism. Like, that was kind of its thing. And like, while you can't Google CNN, so your freedoms are very limited, you never didn't have clothes or food, you know? So yeah. Like, they sort of saw, and they had like Che Guevara and all of these political figures, Castro less so, actually, I would say, than Che Guevara. Che Guevara was everywhere. But I think they, because at the time, Castro was still in power. Okay. So they may be a little bit more suspicious about him. But there was a sense that they were Christian, but they were communist. And when I would talk about being from the U.S., I expected them to be like, oh my God, they're the worst. But actually, they just kept, they looked at me like the ones that spoke English, like, oh, we feel sorry for you because you have to live in this like anti-Christian society.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And so it was a really different experience than China in that sense of like, oh, they don't really know. That's sort of an evil system that you're in. I always tell the story. I told this at beer camp about the movie theater that I went to that, of course, the power goes out all the time. And so we were watching this film, power goes out, we go outside. And everyone's just sitting around sharing drinks and cigars, and had my first Cuban cigar. And everyone's just giving you stuff and they're all just hanging out. And they're like, I remember a guy bit off a cigar, gave it to me and said, this is what Christianity is. Like, the translator I had with me was like, he's telling me this is what it is. And I was like, as the kids say.
Like Briar. I think that's, I don't know. I think that it's so interesting to think about how we're missing that too. Mm-hmm. Like, what, obviously there are pros and cons to a lot of things and we could like list out, and certainly I'm not going to say like which of our countries is in the better situation. I'm not qualified to say that, but like,
no, they're very poor. I will say they're not going to have like iPads, and they're definitely on the $2 system, not the $30 system.
But like,
and they, freedoms are limited for sure, but they don't have to worry about like basic stuff.
Yeah, for sure. But like, yeah, like what kinds of things could we still be like, hey, you're, the way that this operates is significantly better. And also maybe like, what kinds of things do we think make us better that are actually not?
Right. Yeah. Those, seeing some of the rhetoric, be able to like the Trump administration and like watching those people getting deported and getting their head shaved and stuff, I was like, is this what we are? Like, Stuart had it on last night and I was like, I can't watch this because this doesn't even look like a country I recognize anymore.
It is so terrible, and it is so incredibly, I think, just like, we have become the thing that we were supposed to hate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those things were always there. I mean, again, we have some really dark shit in American history and have never been.
And I will say, in Cuba, if that had been a Cuban person that shut down the computer lab, they might have disappeared. So that's, you know.
Yeah.
Something to take into consideration too is that I got away with that and told never to come back because I was a white American person and they didn't want to start that. But like, it is important to acknowledge that, you know, in these systems, people are disappearing. And I think that's like, interesting.
People are disappearing here. We don't have a better situation. I think too, I, right. I was reading this article. It's an opinion article in The Guardian. And it was titled, it was something like, I work out instead of going to the pub, but sometimes I think I'd be happier at the pub. And it
you would
talked about, I mean, yes, obviously. But
as one who's doing, has done both today.
It was a whole conversation about the ways that we have become so obsessive about healthy lifestyles and what's good for us and what it is to be successful and all these things that are actually like kind of deeply harming us as people, because we've lost a lot of communal spaces. We've lost a lot of ways of being social. Like, we aren't doing things to interact with our neighbors. And I think that's one of the things that, like, when I hear, you know, the movie theater, the power went out and everybody went out and just kind of hung out and shared and commune, I'm like, I would love if we had that kind of a society. I would 100% give up knowing that my movie theater wasn't going to lose power. I think
The
sacrifice of having like slightly unstable power in something like that is worth what you would gain in knowing your neighbors and having more community and things like that. So like, but I think
not being so mad about that sort of stuff. Like, I think I looked around at the theater and everyone had instruments and alcohol. And I was like, maybe that's just what they do here.
Yeah.
But they were expecting it to happen, or they were at least anticipating it to happen. And they were still going to have a good time either way. Yeah. And I'm like, how cool would that be if that's sort of our mentality? You know?
Yeah. I think, like, you know, we used to have this kind of stuff. We used to have public squares. We used to go out and be social. I was complaining. I mean, you already know about this, but I was complaining about having to deal with online dating and how like incredibly soul sucking it is and depressing, but there is no other option. There is nothing.
RIP Brandon.
Like, there's nothing. Daniel.
Oh, sorry, Daniel. It was something like that.
There's nothing, like, even if you go to a bar, you're not going to get hit on anymore. I saw some other like tweet or something, not a tweet because I don't go on Twitter, but the equivalent of saying that like, there's a whole swath of Gen Z who's never asked a human out in person. Like, they've only asked people out via text message or online. See, this goes
back to my last week is like, I hate that people can't flirt. I love a good flirt.
Flirting is the best, but only in person.
It's the best.
It's weird when you're texting flirting if you don't know that person. Like, you can't do it.
I know. Yes. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. 100%. Stuart, when we started dating online, made me hold up, I kid you not, a newspaper of the Scotsman that had the date on it in my face, because he didn't believe that I was who I was when we were flirting.
Maybe I need to start doing that.
But I look like, if you look at the picture, I saved it somewhere. It was like I've been kidnapped. And he was sort of like my second or third date on online dating in Scotland. And I was like, no one had asked me to hold up a paper. And I was like, man, who hurt you?
Well, I mean, truly, maybe I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it worked.
Yeah, there's something about our soul that has died as a collective community because of our phones and because of the internet and because, and also I think because we have gotten focused on the thing that doesn't matter, which is like having stuff. And I'm a maximalist. I have a lot of stuff, but like,
I can't really, I went like this, but then I looked behind me.
Like, we're not people with, like,
but all the walls in front of me are all white, if you want to know. Like, or repos gray.
I'm not saying like, oh, it's fine. I'm not trying to like parrot the Orange Man and say like, it's fine if your daughter only gets one doll this year. That's not the point of this. It's like, we can say like, is this society successful and good, not based on its material wealth, but based on the like the health of people in general? And I would say, clearly, the U.S. is not in that place right now. Like, we are not.
And I would love for this to be a reflective moment for them, and just to look around and be like, you know, York and I talked about this, albeit I ran away very quickly, about capitalism and communism and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, this gets brought up in this discussion about learning abroad, because I think part of the importance of going to other places is to see that the sort of stuff you've been taught, maybe socially, is not necessarily or even at all correct. Mm-hmm. When I this is a famous story, but when I told my mom I was studying abroad in Northern Ireland, she got really, really sad. And this was in like 2009. I was like, But because she remembered all this, and it's not to say that everything's okay there, of course it's not, but you know, the Cuba thing too, she was like, you're never gonna come back again.
I think my parents were so worried when I went to China. They were so worried.
Oh yeah.
You know, and like, I think that was too, that was a great eye opener of seeing like, we have, mm-hmm. we still have so much in common. Like, I went over there and I talked to girls about boy bands and basketball. They were really into basketball. We talked a lot about like the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
The little post Spice Girls. So, you know, but like that they were really excited about the Spice Girls. And we were like, yeah, let's talk about Spice Girls. And it was just, it was not like, oh, look at these dying and destitute people. It was like, oh no, these people could be my friends.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just to show that just like any other community, whether that's immigrants, LGBT, or China or Cuba, is that they're just trying to keep us separate because as a collective, we are powerful. Yeah. And if you keep people scared, then they don't start talking about the Spice Girls. You know?
You're scared of somebody that you think is other, this mm-hmm. idea of othering people is really like an old idea, but like that's the point, is that if you other people and then like they buy into this like, oh, those people are bad and evil, it's okay if we deport those people, it's okay if those people don't get due process, you know, all of that kind of stuff. We just, but it's not real, those boundaries aren't real.
They keep the information flowing down so that we point fingers at each other down, mm-hmm. but if we get together and we stop that and we start looking up, then all of a sudden they have to be held accountable for
this reminds me of our conversation about 1984 as well. Like, yeah. if you have mm-hmm. the enemy, mm-hmm. if you have a common enemy, you are really easy to control. Having that enemy is important. Like, you have to have somebody to hate so that the government can be like, all right, it's okay that we've deported this man, or it's okay that this woman has disappeared. You don't care about
Where were that. You in China when you went? Where was your study abroad?
So we went to, it was a place called Hangzhou. It has a university there. I don't remember what the university's name is.
What province was it in?
It's near Shanghai.
Okay.
So we flew into Shanghai and then took a bus to Hangzhou, and we were in Hangzhou for most of the time. Mm-hmm. We met with students. I went to a class, an English class, where they were learning English. It was fun.
Did you learn Chinese? Did you have to do a Chinese class? Because I sure did.
No, we had to learn some sayings and stuff. I was telling my coworkers that the only one that's stuck is how to say, I hear you, but I don't understand you.
I hear you. The words are there. I'm not
because
doing
they,
anything.
They told us, like, if you, like, Americans, the same thing. Like, if you're like, I don't understand you, they'll just talk louder and try to, like, yell the thing at you, mm-hmm. but you're still not going to know what they're saying. And so they were like, so say this. So it's ting budong. And you would say ting budong, and then they would go, oh, okay.
When I sent you my grad transcripts, I saw that I had a intro to Chinese language, and I was like, oh, that's a farce. It's true.
I know.
True.
We learned some. I don't remember. That's all. I have ni hao, and I have
ni hao. Ni hao ma.
And shei shei.
Yeah.
And that is the end of my Chinese, my Mandarin.
I have I want and I want to go to. Those are the two. So wo shi is, and again, y'all Chinese speakers,
I know.
Please.
It's real bad.
That means I want wo shi, and I only learned two things, which is shui bi, which is Sprite, and kala, which is Coca-Cola. Oh. So I could order Sprite or Coca-Cola, and that's it. And then wo shi is I want to go to.
Okay.
So I could say wo shi archita, which is the two arches, which is McDonald's.
Yep. Oh my God. I remember.
My teacher didn't speak English. Keep that in mind. So like we were just living the life.
Everybody's fighting for their lives out there. Yeah.
He would hold up a picture of a card like that you show like infants or toddlers. And he would be like, this is that. And it was like a taxi cab. Wo chi. And then a McDonald's symbol. Archita. We're like, wo chi archita. Take me to McDonald's.
That's fantastic. I do remember one time we got into a cab and we were going back to our hotel, and the cab driver spoke enough English. He said, where are you from? And we said, oh, we're from the United States. And he said, you're American? America make war. And we were like, oh, yeah. Hey.
I was in the Henan province, the which is years. More south. Oh yeah, we thought it was rough then. I was in Zhengzhou, and Zhengzhou Joshua, I learned that in Chinese. When I went to McDonald's, I had to get bags, of course. But that was a province that there was not a lot of foreign people.
No, same.
At all, of any persuasion. And so, like, I would have people come up and, like, touching my hair. Mm-hmm.
We had, like, hordes of people that would come up and just point at us and stuff. And one girl started stroking my cheek and said, "So white. Mm-hmm. So white.
So white." True. I remember the first time I was in like a square and I saw their babies. Again, this is in 2002. Had this little flap where they would just poop.
Yep.
They just like
just right squat, there on the street.
Pop a squat.
Yep.
Just in the street, just like, and then it wasn't. You didn't need diapers. Just like pop the squat. Just
right there on the street. Okay. Yeah, I was in China in 2004. So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, so it's been, we don't want to acknowledge how many years that's been, but it's been a while. So, like, when I talk about Cuba, I actually was in Miami for that conference, and I was in it with a cab driver who was from Miami, and I told him I had been in 2005, 2006, and he was like, "Oh, it's totally different now."
Yeah.
So I am speaking about the experience I had at the time.
Yeah.
Now, what his bias was with all that, that's to be told from him. But he had left after I had gone there and came to America. And he was like, "It's really bad now." So, I want to put that flag in the sand.
I mean, obviously, it has been a long time since I was in China. It, like, if I think about the U.S. in 2004 and now, there are some things that I'm like, yeah, it's different. Some things that I'm like, yeah, that's the same, you know? So I assume that that's true for everywhere, right? But like,
China felt a little more scary. Actually, it felt a lot more scary than Cuba to me.
Did it? I did not feel scared at all in China. We were
not scary as in like I thought I was going to get hauled off, but it felt a little more controlled, I guess is the word I would say. Mm. Like Cuba felt a little more free. I think the control was at, like simmering at the bottom and it was still there. Whereas like, China, you'd wake up, and I don't know if it was like this where you were, but we would get the intercoms that would wake us up with, like, it was very Big Brother-esque, like, information.
Yeah, yeah, we would. I do remember feeling like you could tell that people were, like, when we would go into the university, there was a, like, guard, you know,
yep.
who was watching to see who came on campus and stuff. And there was a lot more of that clear, like, surveillance, I guess. Though I also feel like a part of it, I remember when I first went to Scotland and I remember realizing how much CCTV was around and thinking like people are watching here.
There's a lot.
A lot more, like a lot more than here. I don't feel.
Yeah.
I know we have stuff, but I don't feel like if I'm out that there's just going to be video footage of it the way that I felt like in Scotland too.
For your Dateline story, I hope there is.
I hope there is too. Yes, for that.
But moment. I do think China did feel. Speaking of dance club, I went to a dance club that was made entirely of trampolines.
Oh.
Like the floor was a trampoline, and the guys couldn't dance with you, so everything was dressed up as Christmas decorations as well. Because this is an interesting thing, and this was in like the summertime. They associate, at least in the region I was in, wealth with like Christmas. Americanness and Christmas. Yeah.
Okay.
So there was like Santa Claus stuff everywhere, and it was probably like June or May or whatever. And but the guys to dance with you had to bring you a rose. They weren't allowed to dance with you unless they brought you a rose. And then when you go on the dance floor, you were on a trampoline. It was like floor level, so you didn't have to climb onto the trampoline. Like you just walked out on the floor, but you were immediately bouncing. And I just remember it being insane because like they drink and stuff there. It wasn't a big deal, but like I got a drink and I was like, I'm not gonna be able to do this for a long period of time.
That's amazing.
I like vodka coke, and I was just like, and I'm bouncing, and I'm already bouncing in my head. So this is, we're gonna have to work something out here. That's so, and then I remember I walked out of that club, and a guy went by me and was like, "Big eyes," and like put two circles around his eyes and went like this, "Big eyes." And I was like, I guess this is payback for all those years that people made racial slurs about their eyes.
I feel like, yeah, that might be. All right.
I was like, I just went, okay. I mean, yeah.
My favorite experience, not completely, but like one of my favorite experiences in China is that one night we went to Pizza Hut and it was a fancy restaurant with mm-hmm. a bathroom attendant. We had to get dressed up mm-hmm. and then it was hands down some of the best pizza I've ever had in my life. And I have had all of the best, like if you're like really passionate about a certain kind of pizza, I've had it from that place, you know, like I've been around. So this was...
Oh, Archie Tao was no joke.
This was fantastic. Like I just remember we were all sitting in the Pizza Hut and we were like, there were like candles lit. It was like romantic. And we were like,
ooh.
I mean, it wasn't for us because we were a massive group of people, but like, we were just like, what in the world? Like Pizza Hut is so nice here. Why is our Pizza Hut so shitty?
The Tolkien people will appreciate this. I got all the bootleg. I still have them in my giant case. I got all the, because it was right as Lord of the Rings was coming out. And you know, if you remember, you always had to wait till Christmas mm-hmm. to get the DVDs. And I remember somehow they had the first one, which was out. I got the second one, which wasn't out. And I got the third one, which I don't even think premiered. And I was like, and at the bottom, it was like, this is a review copy for the Academy Awards or something. And I was like,
oh my God.
That's okay. I'll take it.
I bought knockoff Louis Vuitton and like all these brand names. I had Louis Vuitton purses for everyone in my family. I got these really nice wallets, like Hugo Boss, not Hugo Boss, but like something nice for my brothers and my dad. I got all this stuff and I came and it was all really nice stuff. Like it was knockoff, but like quality leather. I got my mom this really nice, authentic, like real pearl necklace. It's beautiful. Like all from the black market, just You had to be kind of cautious.
What did you notice about religion when you went? Did you notice anything?
Mostly it was very kind of awkward to talk about. I remember a lot of like, oh, we don't do that. You know, we did go to a shrine.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one there. It's like just us. It wasn't like not even other tourists. So you could see like remnants of religion. And good Lord, Doc.
Taylor now. I can tell you. I can see that. I'm in the top corner now. Taylor's laughing at something.
You know, it was different. It was like the polar opposite of Norway. Because Norway felt like, yeah, they weren't necessarily religious anymore, but they were still like, oh, these are our beautiful 1,000-year-old churches. Aren't they gorgeous? Like, look at how we appreciate these aspects of our culture. And in China, it really felt like this thing, like they were like, oh, yeah, those are the religious areas. Like it was.
They felt more historic or something.
Yeah. It just felt like more abandoned almost. Like,
mm-hmm. Yep.
They were falling apart, but like it was definitely like. Like I said, the shrine, it was the opposite of any old churches I've been in. Like, there was no one caring for it. There was no one kind of standing guard. There, you know, these kinds of things.
Yeah.
It felt like this, like, yeah, that's a thing people used to do. Whereas, like I said, in Norway, they're not religious, but they're still like, oh, look at this glorious thing, you know.
It's Vikings, you know.
The Vikings.
Just see all the Skarsgårds walking by. And then I just tackle them one by one. Sorry, that was my fantasy, not yours. Anyway, so that the little bit of a history of the religions is that there were different dynasties, and usually the dynasties all had religions. They kind of made the religions of the state, and only when the Communist Party came in, the Communist Party of China came in, that kind of stopped being that way. But so the dynasties would be all kinds of interesting ebbs and flows. And like, usually you would only be a part of one dynasty, but you may be on the cusp of two. But if they decided they liked, you know, Buddhism, and which Buddhism at the time was a foreign religion, it was an Indian religion that came over.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were on the cusp of that and maybe, you know, Taoism or Confucianism or whatever, a lot of the shrines would just kind of, they're kind of combine them all together and put them all there so that the people on the one end can do what they want to do with the other end. So you might get some Buddhist like stuff and then all of a sudden some Confucius stuff too. But like the Indian, it seemed like the Indian, or sorry, the Chinese religions or philosophies, if you want to call them that, were much more celebrated and promoted. I think Buddhism was okay, but it was they were a little sus of it because it was an outside religion. And then Christianity and Islam, by all accounts, it's a little too authoritarian in the sense of their religious, like Muhammad and Jesus. That's not great for them at this moment because of, or even back then, because, you have a figure that you like better than the Supreme, who is supposed to be kind of your religious figure in a way. So it is interesting to go to these shrines, because I went to some too, and they seem to be this amalgam. Like, my religious studies professor was there, Rob Nash, who I now teach classes with, which is so funny. But he would point out all the different aspects that were different religions. He's like, that's Confucian, that's Taoist, that's Buddhist. And then people were just... So I think it's become more of a... You might find this in Japan as well. I did, to an extent, a little more superstitious in a way. Like,
yeah. There's, I think there's, that was kind of the sense, like you get a little bit of that from China, those like meldings. Yeah. Like, here's the bit that's Confucian. Yeah. Here's the bit that's Taoist. Here's the bit, you know, but Japan, I'm really excited to see, because they became so overlapping and so combined. Mm-hmm. So that, like, you have Buddhas in Shinto shrines and like all this. I am really excited. I have one of my students that is going, took my religion class last semester. Mm-hmm. And so I know she's also pretty excited about the shrines. I roped her into being a nerd about it with me. But like, we're...
Buddhism in Japan is a really interesting history. If you...
Yeah, like, I'm really excited for that part of it. I remember this
because they did really well. Buddhism did really well.
It did pretty well there, yeah.
I mean, Christianity did too, and Islam too, but Buddhism also did well.
I did also, I remember this part also in Norway, though, of like old folklore superstitions still being part of their conversation and really entwined with Christianity, which again, I feel like a little bit we don't have a great grasp of here, because we're so like, it's only Christianity because it's Puritans, you know, and so we don't have a good way of like, oh, but look at these bits and pieces of cultural aspects that can be
very over. Roman Empire Christians over here, I would say. Yes, like,
very
just eliminate all the other butts,
take out the
rest. And also I noticed this when Helen was talking about the shows today, that the Brits have a lot of shows like Rev, Father Ted, that kind of are they're funny shows about religion, and we don't have a lot of funny shows about religion,
because our religion shows, no,
we don't kind of let that happen. And I think that's interesting. So I will say, the final trip that I took, which we don't have to go on and on about, but I told Christy about it and she'd actually heard about it, was the Middle Eastern Travel Seminar, otherwise known as METS, which was run by the Patillo Foundation, which are the Coca-Cola people, as FYI. And the reason I want to mention it is because if you guys are 90s kids and you ever watched The Real World, they essentially wanted to make The Real World for seminary and then send us all overseas together. And it was hilarious. Like, it was like, was it the most educational? Now, upon reflection, because a lot of the places we saw are destroyed, sadly, we spent a lot of time in Syria and Lebanon. Yeah. But I will say the human interaction is absolutely hilarious, because essentially what they did is they interviewed a bunch of seminary students. And this is all like, this was like Southern Seminary, Mercer, Emory, like Harvard, like it was all across the board. And they would just go through and you could sign up to be interviewed. And if they thought you were, I don't know what they were looking for, much like The Real World, but if you got picked, you could go.
It's amazing.
And so they came. And me and another guy named Greg got picked, and we went on this seminar, and they put me with a girl named Karen, who was from a Southern Baptist seminary in Johnson City, Tennessee. And I think they purposely did it. And it was even when we were on the bus traveling. So we traveled to Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Egypt, Israel, Palestine, and Greece. Right. And we went with, archaeologists from Harvard, and I'm not really sure where Steve is from, but they were like archaeologists. They weren't necessarily religious archaeologists. Anyway, so they took us all, and we were on these buses, and they told us we like couldn't sleep on the bus. We had to sit with someone who didn't go to our seminary. So it was like a whole thing paid for completely by Coca-Cola. We didn't pay for a cent. Me and Karen ended up, because she just happened to be a little baby liberal that was in Johnson City, Tennessee. And we became like BFF. That's and amazing. She's still a friend. Yeah, to this day. But like, I remember being in Syria and like straight up yelling at this dude that was from Southern Seminary. And like, he was like, you are being disrespectful to the people of Syria and to God. And I was like, okay. And I remember later he got married. Christy, and this is the only thing I'll say about this trip, which there's many more hours I can talk about this trip, but he got married. He invited every single person that was in our class, because we were classes, to his wedding, except for me.
Except for
I was the only one. And he met this girl through a Christian dating site, and he was marrying her. And let me tell you what their wedding song was. Lady in Red.
No, what? That's so weird. That's so weird. Why would you do that?
It was so weird. It was her favorite color.
But did they know? Oh, media literacy is really important, guys. Oh my God.
It's my friend who had gone to my seminary, got invited, and I didn't. So he forwarded me the email.
It's like people who have their wedding song be like Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On or the I Will Always Love You. Like, do you know what this song is about, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. No, it was a really fun trip, and it was really enlightening and game changer, because those trips are cool, but I'm glad I didn't do like the typical sort of like, I'm going to the Holy Land trip. Like these, no, I'm not even sure the people who took us around were religious. They were just showing us like stuff. It was a game
changer. I do think that travel is not travel, like go to resorts, because as much as I like to lay on the beach at a resort, like that's not what we're talking about. But like, genuine travel where you get to like experience and immerse yourself into cultures with the intention of learning about it, not the intention of just like posting on your Instagram. I think that can be one of the best ways to understand yourself. You're not just learning about other cultures. You're learning about yourself. You're learning about your own beliefs. Because the thing that like taught me the most about Christianity was learning about how other people understood Christianity
in other cultures.
Because then all of a sudden I was like, oh, a lot of this is just because I'm American. Like, all of these things are because of here, not because this is the Bible, like, truth, you know? And then to be able to watch how people practice religions, regardless of what religion it is, but to be able to watch that. Every semester, one of my students will ask me if teaching world religions has, like, helped or hurt my personal religious beliefs. And I always tell them that it's helped, because I feel like learning about how much we have in common across these varying religions with a lot of differences. Like, there's a lot of things that are different about these religions, but there's like really fundamental stuff is the same. And I think that seeing that kind of stuff and then recognizing like, why do I pick? Because this is the other thing they always ask at the end of the semester is, what religion are you? And I always like to have them guess first, which is an entertaining experience. But to be able to like say, okay, I'm practicing this religion, or I understand my beliefs in this way, not because I think I've got some like secret mastermind truth, but because it's the one that helps me and the one that I find the most compelling in light of the diversity of the world. You know,
100%. And you recognize your geography, like we've talked about this.
You recognize your bias.
Religious. I grew up in Georgia. Helen was talking. Our friend Helen was talking that she grew up Catholic because her family,
like, Scotland.
A lot of this stuff is not a choice. Like, I didn't wake up from my birthing den and go, "Ah, today I shall be Christian."
Yeah.
Like, that was not like what happened. So I think it's also doing, you know, if you can't handle to hear other people's beliefs without vilifying them or ignoring them, then I think your belief is quite small.
Yes.
Because that's not faith. That's not faith or belief anymore. That's confirmation bias. Yep. And that is a different thing.
Yep.
If you can only surround yourself. And I say that even with the people when they talk about like the deconstructed stuff, like, you know, don't become the thing you hate. Like, there are still qualities about the religious traditions that we grew up in that you maybe can still reclaim. Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up Southern Baptist, and I know Tripp did as well, who does beer camp. And I know many of you who listen maybe did too, but there are still traditions out of that. Especially, you talked about, Christy, the communal aspect, which was one of my favorite things about that church that will hold a place in my heart forever. Like, we don't have to give that stuff up because we don't. We've quote deconstructed some of the stuff away. So I think that's important too.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize like what our biases are, how our culture has informed us about certain things, but then also to be able to see that everybody is flawed and everybody is trying their best with what they have. And that has come across in a myriad of ways. And some of it has been bad and some of it has been good. And the only thing we can really do is to keep striving to be good with the information we have, but like collecting 100%. More information is always better. Education is important. Travel, like authentic travel, is important. I know it's really expensive, but we also have more access to like virtual traveling than we used to, and experiencing other cultures. Even if you can't go places, you can still learn about other cultures. Like, there's a ton of public theologians and public religious scholars who put up YouTube pages and stuff like that. You can just be like, hey, I want to learn about Buddhism. And you can find really great information out there. And I think that the more we do that, the more, like, the better we become, generally.
I can't wait to hear all about, and this is a genuine thing because I spent a very brief time in Japan, mostly in Tokyo, not academic. I can't wait to hear about Shintoism from Christy's perspective when she comes back, and that is a genuine thing. And you know what? That does not make me any less Christian.
No,
I'm genuinely interested in hearing about that.
I'm really excited about it. Obviously, I'm going to be posting pictures on the Instagram, and then I'll tell you guys all about it. We're there for 10 days,
come hang out with me.
Somebody's gonna need to entertain Leah. Stuart can only check in on me for so long.
Stuart doesn't want to hang out with me as much as Christy does. This is a different version.
But a couple of important things. We picked a book.
Yeah.
And by that I mean we all picked a book. So good job voting, everybody. It is Slaughterhouse 5. Yes.
Kurt Vonnegut.
Neither of us have read it, so we're both excited about that.
I will say that film major that I mentioned before was obsessed with Kurt Vonnegut too, and the shocking news of the century.
They always are. Oh my God.
But I have never read it. No.
I've owned this book for many a year and I have never picked it up to read it. So this is good motivation to read books I own.
Stuart got on Amazon immediately because Stuart's in our book club. Mm-hmm. And so is Mervin right now, and you can absolutely be a part of it. Please, but he looks and he goes, oh, it's short. Good.
It is short. Yep. Also, we will let you all know what date very soon because we haven't picked one yet, but we'll figure out a date soon.
Because Christy's got to go away.
I have to be gone. I'm gone for 10 days and then I will be, really tired for a minute. But
we need to figure out the time difference as well.
It's like 13 hours.
We need to figure it out.
It's 13 hour time difference, which is.
That's not doable.
Nope.
Nobody likes that.
It's gonna be really hard for me. But I'm excited for our book club.
Leslie, please do sign up for our book club. It was really fun last time.
It was really fun. We promise it's really fun.
It's really nice. And this time we've not read the book. None of us have read the books.
As a reminder, there are two levels. So you can sign up to be part of the group that is in the recording and you can chat with us. We're just as delightful in that as we are right now. And you can yell at us and keep us on track. Number two is you can also sign up just to watch the videos later if you can't participate in the actual book club. And you'll get access, either way, you'll get access to the 1984 video as well. So you can, if you missed that one, you can watch that video.
And I will say that we're doing, as soon as we get this money, we're going to do merch. So yeah, we're going to have theology on the rock. So that is a good motivation because we all need
theology on the rock. Theology on the rock shirt and it can have sayings.
I think we need to have sayings on the back, which would be so funny.
So funny. But yeah, there's just a lot of things that we want to do, but it requires money. So we need y'all to join our Patreon.
Would sign up for beer camp because we're going to be there.
Sign up for beer camp. You have 1 week left until the prices go up. So make sure you sign up during early bird registration. We're going to be there again. The theme is Monty Python and the Holy Grail, which a bunch of us watched together the other night. And I have to say, it is just as funny as I remembered it being. And I still know almost the entire movie by heart.
Because I think, we'll talk about it later.
You and certain other
people. I don't have as much British humor as you. I like the film very much, but I don't think the whole thing is funny. I think some of it's not quite as funny as the other bits.
I think there are some.
If you want to chop off the arms of that knight when he's still trying to fight, I'm here for that. Fantastic. All day.
Some of it is incredibly British humor, and
it is. And I'm married to one. I should be better at it,
but that's okay. But it is. It was a delight to watch again. So we're excited about all of these upcoming things. Join us. Yeah.
Well, we wish Christy well. Arigato.
Hopefully I don't die on the plane.
You won't die on the plane. Just take the Xanax and it won't matter anymore. On that note, goodbye from us.
Goodbye.
We'll see also, no, I have another announcement.
Yeah.
Sorry, before we go. When Christy is away, Stuart did a Star Wars quiz at our local bar the other day that truly stumped most of the people there. And so I am going to ask Will from Systematic Geekology if he wants to do maybe like a combo.
Yeah.
And do a Theology on the Rocks Geekology combo while you're away.
I love that.
And maybe do like the quiz.
I love that.
And see if people want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes, I'm glad.
We're just going to be saying, yeah, that's the rum. Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
It's all right. We'll talk to you guys later.
See you all soon. Bye.
Bye.
I never know when it's actually stopping. That was.